47, verse 28. And that itself, if you notice, this parsha is called the Parsha Stuma, meaning that normally when you start a new sedra, you normally have a pay or a samach, meaning like the chapter ends. But here, as you see, it's just a continuation to the previous chapter. So if you look in the Torah itself, you see in the Torah itself there's just a continuation in the column. There is no hefsik, there is no separation at all from the event that happened before until this part. Now sosum, the word sosum means closed or hidden. So it says that this parsha is satuma because Yaakov Avinu in this parsha sought to tell the children of Israel when the end of this gullus will come. But when he started to speak, so like the Shechina, the Ruach HaKedesh departed. So it wasn't the time, or it wasn't appropriate for the children of Israel to know when the Sof of the Golus will come. Now, in that vein, the Ramban, in the beginning of the Sedra, speaks that Yaakov's exile into Egypt depicts the fourth, in the vision of Daniel, which we learned, the fourth of the animals of the Chayas, which speaks about our exile, which is the exile of Rome. And the children of Yaakov themselves, we've mentioned this previously, they were responsible, of course, by the sale of Yosef to come to Mitzrayim. They caused their own sojourn in Mitzrayim. It was destined, but they brought it about, because they sold Yosef, and by selling Yosef, they ended up Mitzrayim in Egypt. So Yaakov went there only because he wanted to be saved, because Paro befriended them. And Yaakov immediately had hoped that in a few years, when the hunger subsides, he would be able to return to Canaan. Just like he said, Lo gur bo aretz banu, he told Pharaoh that we really came here only to live here, because there is not the proper pasture or fodder for the animals. And he didn't, however. Yaakov Avinu never was able to ascend. It means he remained there and he died in Mitzrayim. But the Golus prolonged itself. And he died there and his bones were returned. And it says, and the elders of Pharaoh, in this week's Sedra, we'll learn the elders of Pharaoh and the dignitaries of Egypt, they ascended with the bones as the funeral entourage. They ascended with Yaakov, and they made a very great mourning, meaning, as we'll see later, that they openly mourned Yaakov Avinu. So this is the events that happened, Yaakov in Mitzrayim. So he says, we together with Rome and Edom, our brothers, also, we were responsible for this Golus. This Golus that we're now is called Golus Rome, by the Roman Empire. Now, Rome, you'll say, what is the connection from Rome to Edom? Edom is Esau. But it's interesting, actually, there is a Medrash in the end, brought down in the Ramban later, which explains what the relationship between Edom and Rome could be. Yaakov Avinu, we're going to learn shortly, tells the children of Israel, tells Yosef, that he wants to be buried in the Moras HaMachpelah. And it says later, Moras HaMachpelah, he says, where my father and my mother and I buried Leah. So at the end of the chapter, in chapter 49, verse 31, he repeats that. And he says there, Shama Kovres Yitzchak, there Yitzchak was buried. We'll speak at length about that perhaps later. But in that Ramban, as a lengthy Ramban, he quotes a fact, he says, that we find in the Divrei Hayomim for Yosef ben Gurion. Yosef ben Gurion is known as the Book of Josephus. And he says in Josephus's writings, and in other early history books, this incident is relayed, that what happened? Sopho ben Eliphaz ben Esav, the grandson of Esav, came, and he did not want to permit Yaakov to be buried in the Moras HaMachpelah. although Yaakov had buried Leah there, and it was Mekubal, it was related that there would only be three couples there. But he put up a fight, and he didn't want to let them bury him until they waged war. And Yosef's army, or Yosef's gang, was stronger, and they captured him as a prisoner with his soldiers. They brought him to Egypt. And he was incarcerated in Egypt the entire period that Yosef was the governor. But when Yosef died, he escaped from Egypt. And he went to the land of Khanfania, and he became the king on the Kittim in Rome, a group in Rome. And at the end, he became the king over Italy. And he is the one, the first king in Rome. He built the first great palace for the kings in Rome. So it comes out that a good part of the Roman Empire was represented by their king and ultimately come from the stock of Esau. So according to this, when we say Rome, the Gaulus of Rome, which we're in now, because Titus brought about the destruction of the second Beis Hamikdash, this Gaulus we always call the Gaulus of Esau, of Seir. There is a, according to this historical fact from Josephus, there is a direct relationship between the Gaulus of Rome and the seed of Esau, because they were the ones that sought to stop him from burying there and put this history. So now he says the following, comparable to the events that happened, returning to what we're speaking about. So we together, he says, we're responsible for becoming part of Gaulus Rome. We ourselves. Why? Because we made a covenant with the Romans. In addition to making a covenant with the Romans, he says, Agrippus, who was the first king of the second dynasty, of the second temple, he ran away to them and asked them for aid. But besides asking them for aid, and b'pnei harov, and because of hunger, the people of Yerushalayim ultimately succumbed, and Yerushalayim was captured. So you see the symbolic connection. The idea was that we were responsible for the Egyptian exile, and it came, it had something to do with hunger, and also we were driven out of Canaan, later out of Israel, in the same way. Then he says further, and then he says, V'anachnu bo kemesim, just the quote is almost, he says, Hagolus orach, almost poetic, he says, Hagolus orach oleinu meod. The golus, he says, is very prolonged. Lo noida kitze kishar hagolios. We don't know when the end will come, like originally in the golus of Mitzrayim, originally in the Gaulus of the first temple, and they knew 70 years, just a question from when the 70 years, but they knew that, and originally in Egypt, they knew 400 years, a question when the 400 years, but at least there was a Kates. But he says, V'anachnu beke mesim, we don't know, and we go around like mesim, God forbid. Amrim, we say, Yofshu atz mosenu, nigzarnu lonu, that we say, quoting a passage of Yechezkel, like our bones are dried out, we are like cut away. V'yalu aseinu, and v'yir, so he says, but the end will be, v'yale eisonu mikol ha'amim mincha l'Hashem. All the nations will ultimately bring a mincha unto God, and they will recognize our greatness. V'yi Elohim evil kovei, they will first suffer a great mourning when they will see our glory. And then he says, and we will see in the nekama of God that God will take. So he uses these words of strengthening Klal Yisrael. So you see the connection between the Gaulus of Mitzrayim to the Gaulus that we're in now. You also see the important point of Haketz. If Yaakov Avinu would have been able to tell us the Ketz, or just at least give us some understanding of the Ketz, then we would have more to look forward to, knowing that it could be in a definite time. But it says that Yaakov Avinu did not. All he did, perhaps, was to tell us how to exist in Gaulus. But he wasn't able to tell us the Ketz. Telling us how to exist in Gaulus is really the chapter later when he speaks about each of the sons their strengths and their weaknesses. And by the fact that he mentions their strengths and their weaknesses, he gives us a lot of insight in the way we as children of Israel will be able to exist in Golus. But we'll get to that. There's a law that from Edom, once he converts, he's not allowed to marry into the, after converting, to marry into Jewish families for a certain period of time, certain generations. Now, there are a number of those restrictions in the Torah, and we say that they can't really apply now, because after Sancheriv, in the time of the first temple, went ahead and he destroyed, it says, Bilbo, confused the entire world, meaning he interchanged populations. We really don't know if the Egyptians an Egyptian or where's from where. But it does say that Rome, there are some poskim that held that this restriction still applies to Rome, that they had the Kabbalah, that Rome is from the Tzid of Esav, and therefore they weren't touched by Sancheriv. So the Romans, the Italians of the present, they were cheshed that you can't marry a first generation convert from Italy, has these restrictions on it. So we did have the Kabbalah that the Golus only had to do with Edom. That we don't need Josephus. But the interesting point is not only it's a symbolic thing, but according to Josephus, it would make more sense because you see a direct connection. Now that's just the story he's bringing from the history of those nations. It's not a question of making any decisions based on that. Now it says here, Vayechi Yaakov be'eretz Mitzrayim. We started out to say that this parsha is stuma, but it also uses an interesting expression. It says that Yaakov lived in Egypt 17 years, and the days of his life were 7 years and 140, meaning 147 years. So you can see how two different commentaries look at this verse. Hirsch looks at this verse that it was really the troubled years of Yaakov's life that were called Yaakov lived. Why? Because Yaakov, he says, had been tested. The purpose of Yaakov's life was to depict the black history moments in Jewish history, the moments of Golus. That's really the life of Yaakov. To live in Eretz Yisrael, he says that each of our forefathers had a certain lesson. His life represented a certain stage of what the children of Israel will have to go through or will go through in the future years. Avram represented the stage of Nesiyah Lekim, the King of God. Everybody bowed down to him. Everybody respected him. Yitzchak had power, but he was half in Golus. He was in the twilight between. But Yaakov, we know, represented the bitter Golus. So in a sense, Yaakov, what did he have to contribute? What was his contribution? Every person is put in this world with a contribution. He obviously had a greater contribution to make. His contribution was to show how a Jew lives in the Golus. So when does Yaakov say, not just Lo Gur, see, and I don't remember if we went through this last week with this group. If you look back at chapter 47, when Yaakov comes into Mitzrayim, Yosef brings him to Paro. And if you say 47:8, it says, Vayomer Paro El Yaakov. When Yaakov walked into Paro, so Paro saw an older man standing before him. He was gray and looked very old. So he said to him, Kama Yemei Shnei Chayecha. How many days are there in the years of your life? So Hirsch notes that he was very clear and precise in his language, because Yemei means Yemei Shnei. A lot of people have a life. The life is years. You know, you count years. But counting years doesn't mean anything, because, like we say, Elef Shonim Beinecha Kiyoyim Esmo. 1,000 years, like a fleeting shadow. But a person whose life means something is that he lives every year, every day of his life, with a mission, with a purpose. So he speaks to Yaakov and he asks him, Kamo Yemei Shnei Chayecha. How many days? It's a nice way of saying your life wasn't frittered away, your life wasn't wasted. So how many days are comprised in your year? In your years of your life, how many days, not how many years, but how many days, because each moment counted. So Yaakov answered Pharaoh, and look how he answers him in 9, Yemei Shnei Megurai. He's answering him, of course, in a humble attitude. Pharaoh asked him out of respect that a person of his stature and carriage wouldn't go ahead and waste his time. But he answers him, Yemei Shnei Megurai, my sojourning here, meaning not the days really that I can really call my life, he says. You ask after the days of the years of my life. He says, I haven't lived much. I have sojourned here for 130 years. But me'at v'royim hoyu yemei shnei chayoi. Few and evil, bad, ominous, were the days that I had to live. Meaning my mission in life were really the days when I had to go through suffering. And these were the days of my life, because that's what the destiny of Yaakov Avinu was to represent. And he says, me'at v'royim. The days of the years that I can really call my life, he says, were in reality only few. And really, that means like what I accomplished. And they were royim. They were just the bitterest and those most full of worry. I had the mission of doing the duties of unhappiness in unhappiness. The bitter golas. So now Hirsch, getting back to this view, verse 28, where we were reading in today's chapter, it says, Vayechi Yaakov be'eretz Mitzrayim. When was the life of Yaakov in Eretz Mitzrayim? That's called life. Why? Because that was in the Golas. So that's really when he fulfilled the most important part of his mission. To quote him, he says, it was rather, he says, one would think that these were the happiest moments of his life. And if the happiest moments of his life, we should have expected to find the relation to the previous life to be brought into prominence by starting with a fresh chapter. This is the last chapter. It's a fresh chapter on its own. But the fact that this is not the case, he says, teaches us that through these 17, though these 17 years certainly are to be reckoned with the rest of his life, but nationally they form the lesser important part of it. It was rather the troubled years of his life in which the test had to be gone through in the midst of the bitterest fate of a Jacob to be worthy of acquiring the name of Israel. So it says, although Vayechi Yaakov be'eretz Mitzrayim, Shvay Esrei Shana, but this really, this was a little easier for him. But it wasn't the main apex of his life. Now if we'll just take this consideration a little bit further. He was in Golas, right? He was in Golas, so therefore it's called Vayechi, if we put it in conjunction with before. This is a period that he lived because he lived in Golas. But he said, in the previous language, me'at v'royim, few, but v'royim hoyu shmei chayai, meaning that I had the unpleasantness in the unpleasantness. Here, in a sense, he had the pleasantness in the unpleasantness. It could be called chayai, his life. It was still his life, but it wasn't, it was a climax of the previous life. But it wasn't the idea that that was the most important part of his life. It was a continuation of his golus. But this golus wasn't as bad as the other golios that he had to suffer. Now the Malbim interprets this Vayechi as meaning that this was the best period of his life. Vayechi Yaakov, he says, a man's final days are the measure of his entire life. And even one who has lived all his days in dire straits, if at the end he finds his lot improved, he'll forget the travail and imagine that his whole life had been lived in fortunate circumstances. Like was here, he says, because Yaakov had lived 17 years in contentment, these years, or the years of Yaakov, were the years of his life. It was as if all his years had been years of living and successful achievement. So we see that it's a contrary view, that Yaakov, different than Hirsch. Hirsch took on that Yaakov's life living depicted Golas, and therefore this wasn't anything unique. So therefore it didn't, in fact, it wasn't the highest degree of Golas, so it didn't deserve its own chapter. But he says, no, that Vayechi, Yaakov, Be'eretz Mitzrayim, the expression of Vayechi, this has a relevance to the whole life, and he measures the whole life with this Vayechi. Why it doesn't get its own chapter, he doesn't compare one point to the second. Now, he calls Yosef and he asks Yosef that he should be buried in Canaan. Now, he asked Yosef to do chesed ve'emes. Now, he says, what is the chesed ve'emes? He says that Yaakov knew that Yosef would bury his father with a great ceremony in all splendor. He'll give him a state's funeral. But he said, with all this chesed, don't forget the emes. That's the way. If you notice the language, chesed ve'emes. The chesed, you're going to give me a state's funeral. But the emes is, al notik beruni b'mitzrayim. I would rather not be buried at all than to be buried in Egypt. The whole stress is his request not to be buried in Egypt. Now, we could have understood the way he writes, that Pharaoh and the Egyptians would by no means have been pleased if Yaakov had moved again back out of Egypt, so that the bringing of the body to Canaan wouldn't make such a good impression. And that would show that Yosef's family didn't consider themselves to be naturalized and that their hearts were still in their old homeland. So the idea of burying someone would show that they're like strangers. Very interesting, because the Jews throughout ages, the idea of burial in Israel. Also interesting that you never have anybody, why doesn't somebody throw this up, that they always consider them strangers because they all want to be buried in the Holy Land. Even in our day, you don't see the enemies, our enemies, throw this up at us, that we're strangers. You know, they always want to say that we're strangers, we don't consider ourselves naturalized. But Yaakov realized that, and that's why he went to give a shvuah to Yosef, because he realized that Pharaoh would give a certain credibility to Yosef's shvuah. If you notice, he tells Yosef, it says, Vayikra v'yemei Yisrael amuz, Vayikra libno, he called his son, and he also called Yosef, meaning he called his son, but he called his son who is a governor, who would have power to do something. So he says, do with me chesed v'emes. Don't bury me in Egypt. Some say chesed means, what's the dual language? Well, Hirsch just said it, but some interpret the language a little different. Chesed means Yosef, governor of Egypt, do with me kindness. Emes means my son, you owe me this kindness. So he's saying like chesed as a governor and emes as a son. So he says, then he tells him in 31, Yosef says, in 30, this is the way the Malbim interprets, Yosef says, fine, anechi, I will do like you speak, kidvorecha. Yosef felt it was an insult. The Malbim says that he as a son should have to swear to the father. The father doesn't trust him. He needs a shvuah. So he says, anechi ese kidvorecha. I don't want to swear. I will do what you want me to do as a son. So Yaakov told him in 31, all right, I won't make you swear, but I ask of you, willingly, on your own, give me a shvuah. See, Yosef, according to him, was a little bit insulted because he says, Sim no yotcho v'yosisi tachas yorechi, meaning accept a shvuah. So Yosef says, I don't have to have a shvuah placed upon me. My word is as a son. So he says, all right, hishovali, swear to me, meaning I won't make you swear, but I'd love for you to volunteer your shvuah. Why did he mean the shvuah? Because he realized that later, he could use the shvuah when he reaches Paro, because in order to be able to get Paro. Now you would say, but Yosef is so close to Paro, I mean, how could he need any shvuah? The truth of the matter is, this gives us a little bit of insight into governments, how governments are run, because when you look a little bit later, it would strike one in chapter 50, sentence 4, if you read there, Vayavru yamei b'chi yoso, after the period of mourning had left, Vaydaber Yosef el beis Paro lemor. Means after Yaakov had died and the mourning was over, so Yosef spoke to Pharaoh's family saying, Imno metzosi chem beinechem, if I found favor in your eyes, Dabru nor beozne Paro lemor. Speak to Pharaoh saying, Ovi ishbiani lemor. My father made me swear saying. So you see then Yosef appreciated the idea himself of the shvuah, right? Of the shvuah. And in fact, in sentence 6, it says there that Pharaoh said, Aleu kfor esovicho ka'asher hishbiecho, like you swore. So the emphasis is again on the shvuah. That if it wouldn't have been a shvuah, so he may have had some difficulty. Yaakov had foresight in realizing that. Not only that, you'll say, but Yosef was close to him. You would think that a Secretary of State who has access to the White House, to the President, to the Oval Office, would be able to get any favor done. He wants some favor done, right? He wouldn't have to go through the girl secretary who's for the appointments out for. It doesn't work that way. When he wants a personal favor, he has to go ahead and go through the proper channels. So that really tells us this in sentence 4. It says there, Vaidaber Yosef, not El Paro. He couldn't go right into Pharaoh. This was personal business. Vaidaber Yosef El Beis Paro Lemor. It means he was a high second to the throne, yet if he wanted a favor, he had to go through the house of Pharaoh. That means the servants of Pharaoh, that they should intercede on his behalf of Pharaoh. So this is the protocol. So Yaakov Avinu was really concerned, and he knew that it wasn't so close that he won't refuse Yosef. It doesn't work that way. So therefore it was necessary for him to forewarn him with the Shvuah. So he gives him this Shvua, and to quote Hirsch, this was also a lesson to the children of Israel, because the previous sentence, the previous chapter ended in 47:27, it ended there that the children of Israel dwelt in Egypt, in the land of Goshen, and it says, and they grabbed hold of it. They were captured by it. They became gripped by the land of Egypt. The land of Egypt had control over them, whereas they assimilated. Now, the Novi Yecheskel says this is the beginning of the Chet in Egypt. That they became Egyptians. They multiplied and they were fruitful and they multiplied. And this is what Yaakov Avinu was afraid. So his lesson right here was saying the following, to quote Hirsch. He says, this itself would be sufficient motive for him to press with such solemnity that they shouldn't bury him in Egypt, because they should carry him to the land of their old true homeland. Motive enough for him to say to them, you hope and wish to live in Egypt. I do not even want to be buried. That is also why he did not express this wish as Jacob, from his individual standpoint, but as Israel, as bearer of the national mission, as a warning of the future of his children. As it says here, Vayikravu Yemei Yisroel Lamus, Vayikra Libnei LeYosef. It just says in sentence 28 that Yaakov lived. Why does he go to Yisroel? So we know the change of Yaakov to Yisroel has many connotations. Basically, Yaakov is more of a personal point, and also Tzoris, they always say Yaakov Golus. And Yisrael means formal and depicts the higher crest of Yaakov's future, that it's the nation, the national pride of the Jews, and so on. So here, in sentence 29, it leaves the expression of Yaakov in 28, and it goes to Yisrael. So Hirsch says that's the change to Yisrael, to emphasize that Yaakov wasn't asking Jacob only as a father asks a son, but he was speaking as a bearer of the national mission, that it's important for them to learn. Now, this is something that became part of Klal Yisroel's life, because throughout history, is a way of saying, although we find in the Talmud itself, we find contrary view, if it's buried in Eretz Yisroel or it's not. We find that some of the Amoraim point out that when they saw bringing a Oren from Babel, so they said, now he comes. Why didn't he come when he was living? So the idea is, you send us Mason. So that's like one view. On the other hand, there's another view that holds, that's why there now it's a stop. Many tzaddikim that are buried in America, that they can't bring themselves, you know, like to go to Eretz Yisrael to be buried after. But there are two different views. But historically, it's always been Kfura in Eretz Yisrael. In fact, the little bit of earth is of Eretz Yisrael earth. And the origin of that is, of course, the origin is of Yaakov. Now, just we're speaking of the burial. It said there that he continues to Yosef, and what does he tell him? He tells him in chapter 48, continues saying to Yosef, in sentence 3, when Yosef appears to him, he says, God appeared to me in Canaan, and he blessed me, and he said, I be fruitful and multiply, and I will give you to a multitude, you will become a congregation, and this land will be given to you, and for your children afterwards, an inheritance. And then in sentence 5, this is where he chooses Ephraim and Manasseh to have the same status and stature as Reuven and Shimon. Now, this is interesting because we know there are only 12 tribes. Sometimes you'll find the 12 tribes described as Levi. Levi has part of the 12 tribes. Whenever Levi is involved in the 12 tribes, then Yosef is only one tribe. When it comes for Chalukas Ha'oretz, dividing the land, the figure is 12. When it comes for Chalukas Ha'oretz to divide the land, so there you have 12 tribes, but Levi is not part of that, because Levi did not get a portion of the land, so then you have Ephraim and Manasseh. They were the portions of that. Now, also when they moved along with the Degolim, the Levim were in the center around the Oron, so you had the other 12 tribes. I give you this double portion because God has spoke to me at that time that I will have multitude, or here be Sicha, that you will be blessed. And after that, I didn't have any more children, so therefore you're the one that will fulfill this. And then he goes in 7, and when I came from Paddan Aram, your mother Rachel died, and therefore, and I buried her in Erech Ephros, he Beis Lechem, in Beis Lechem. Now, the question is, why does he bring in this sentence at all? What is the significance of this? So Rashi, the Mephoshim speak out, that the idea is that he'll think that Yosef will have a grievance against him. Why? Because here he's asking him to take him all the way to the Moras HaMachpelah, and there his mother, who died in Israel, so she couldn't go into the Moras HaMachpelah. So how could he ask him? So he's saying, he gives him an answer, that I came from Paddan Aram, so Rachel died, and I couldn't have taken her there because she was very far, you know, it wasn't that distance, but there was no time to go ahead and to take her because it was, what could I leave the little children with all my possessions? It just wasn't possible. So he like gives him an excuse. But Hirsch claims that that can't be, because if this was an excuse about bearing, right, so it shouldn't be put in right there. It should be where he speaks to him in sentence 30 of the previous chapter, 47:30, where he commands him, Vishachafti imavosai, that I, when I die, please take me there and bury me. So he should have told him the reason I didn't bury your mother there was because she died, b'derech Ephros. But he doesn't mention this statement when he speaks of the burial. He mentions this statement towards the end when he speaks of giving the double blessing to the children. Why does he keep this statement to the end and not during those phrases that deal with the request to be buried? So therefore, Hirsch says that this has nothing to do with the burial. But what he's trying to say is that God told me I will be multiplied and will be v'yibisticha. But I don't have anybody because he said, your mother died and I had to bury her there and she's like not with me. So what do we have? What do I have of Klal Yisrael from the wife that I love? So therefore, he says, this gift I'm going to give you. So at least Rachel will like have another part of Klal Yisrael, Ephraim and Manasseh, under her. So according to Hirsch, this is the reason it was placed in here. He says, when the children of Israel, he speaks about her, when the children of Israel in later times visited the graves of their ancestors, they would find Avram Sora, Yitzchak Rivke, Yaakov Leah, but Rachel, Yosef's mother, was not granted even in death to receive her place in the resting place of the ancestors, and only two tribes call her their mother. So it would be just the wife of his heart, whom he had thought of as the real mother of his future people, who might vanish from the hearts of the nation. Therefore, it was his deep desire to raise Joseph, Rachel's firstborn, to be the firstborn of the natural tribes by making his sons into two tribes, to grant him the right of the firstborn by a double portion. So this is the way he describes the reason why Rachel, Mesa Alai Rachel, was inserted at this point, rather when he was speaking of the burial. Now, what was the true reason why Rachel was not buried? So according to Rashi, he like emphasizes that it was very difficult. The Ramban speaks about this. Rabban quotes Rashi, and it says, I didn't take her even to Beis Lechem. The words were la'achniso la'oretz, to bring her into Eretz Yisrael. That's Rashi's word. Why? So he says, I don't understand what the Rashi means. She died in Eretz Yisrael. This is Eretz Yisrael. So what does it mean, la'achniso la'oretz? So this, all the scholars try to answer Rashi. Rashi seems to say that I didn't bring her in, la'achniso la'oretz, to bury her in Eretz Yisrael, but she died in Beis Lechem, which is in the heart of Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, some answer, La'oretz doesn't mean Eretz Yisrael, but La'oretz means in the populated area. She died b'derech Efrosa. There was nothing there in the middle of the wilderness. In the middle there, he made a grave, and I couldn't even take her into a populated area. That's how some interpret. Others say La'oretz, that it still was considered like Chutz La'oretz. Why? Because till the days of Yoshua, they didn't become the owners of Eretz Yisrael. Yoshua sanctified Eretz Yisrael. But areas that were not sanctified, the Moras HaMachpelah was bought by Avraham Avinu. So that gave it its sanctity. That already had the Kedusha, the sanctity of Eretz Yisrael. But this was in the middle. Nobody owned it. There was nobody, but he couldn't even bring her into the next village and to purchase a place. So since this was in the middle and it wasn't through a purchase, it didn't have a law, a din of Eretz Yisrael. But this is a lot of discussion. What does Rashi mean that it's not Eretz Yisrael? But then the Ramban continues. He says, I buried her, and then he continues quoting, and I know that you're angry at me, but know this, that I did not do this on my own, Medrash says. God wanted me to do this. In order that Rachel should be a help for her children when they go into Golus, and they passed their kever, her kever, so ubikshi rachamim alehem, and Rachel stood up and interceded on them. And this is the famous quote that we quote from Yirmiyah, kol beroma nishma Rachel mevake al bonel. And God answers her, yeschar lepulasoch, your deeds will be answered, shavu bonim ligvulam, the children will come back. That's the phrase of Yirmiyah. So it seems that Rachel, he said, was Alpi Hadibur. Ramban says, but that's a very nice medrash, but if you look at chapter 48, verse 7, where he says, does it mention anything about that? So the Ramban says that the proof is from the Pasuk itself. If you look at the Hebrew, it reads, and when I came from Paddan, Rachel died, Be'eretz Knan, Be'derech, right? Be'eret Kivras Oretz, when there was still a stretch of land, as you come into Ephras. So he should say, Ve'ekber Hashom, and I buried her there, he Beis Lochem. Why does it put in the word again? Ve'ekber Hashom Ba'derech. Ramban says the second Ba'derech in that passage is extra. So that's why the Medrash says that Ve'ekber Hashom, why was she buried there? Baderech, in order that she should be available, Baderech, when they're on the way into exile, she should be there in order to intercede on their behalf. Now, Baderech Apshat, now he also wants to say, what was the real reason? What, however, was the real reason why Yaakov Avinu wasn't buried? So he says, when you learn Pashit, he wants to tell Yosef, I couldn't bury her because she died, and I couldn't leave the family, like we said. That was the input here, the Ramban says. But the Ramban says that wasn't the true reason. The true reason he comes up with the end. Hakavona shel Yaakov shelaholich osolim ora. Why didn't he bring her to the Maaz Machpelah? In order that he shouldn't be buried with two wives, their two sisters. In order that he wouldn't be shamed from his fathers that are laying there. So why was Leah picked? He says, because Leah was the first one that he married. And Rachel, because of his love, right, and he promised to marry her, so he married her. But really, the first one that he married was Leah. And therefore, Leah was the one who was his true wife. And this is what the Ramban says. Now, even on this statement, you find in the writings, halachically, there is a whole discourse on this. Because who really was the true wife? When you look back in the Chumash, Rachel, he told Lavan, let me work for Rachel, and the 7 years that I work for Rachel, she'll be betrothed to me. So in a sense, Rachel was betrothed to him by the labor that he worked. So then Leah lived with him. He consummated the marriage with Leah, but Rachel was really the one who betrothed. So that has a din of Erusin, which is the din of a wife. You have to divorce a wife after a betrothal. You can't dissolve that union just like this. So if you look back in it, why does it say that his true wife was Leah? His true wife really should have been Rachel. So some want to bring proof from this. This goes into discussion that halachically, before the Torah was given, did the laws of the Jewish, of the Torah apply? Or really they were governed by the laws of Bnei Noach? What is the difference? Because in the laws of the Bnei Noach, meaning humanity in general, there's no such thing as a kedushin. Betrothal, erusin, is what we call sanctification, kedushin. By the non-Jew, the wife is determined by their consummation of the marriage. The act of kedushin doesn't have any validity. Therefore, if he went according to that law, that he had a law of the Ben Noach, so his true wife would have been Leah rather than Rachel. So some, like the Ramban here, write that the true wife was Leah, and you do find amongst others who emphasize that the true wife was not Leah, but the true wife was Rachel. It would depend really on this question if she is considered halachically. They were considered like Bnei Noach, and they had the general laws dealing with society, with humanity, or they already were different in that they observed in family lives and issues, they observed the ways of the Torah later. That would depend on this one point. There's also the question he mentions to Yosef. The Ramban says, I didn't have any doctors or any medicine to go ahead and to embalm her, because he also had to travel a great distance, so they were embalmed. Because later it says that Yaakov Avinu was embalmed. Now, how was Yaakov permitted to be embalmed? That's a separate question. And there are various approaches to that, which the Ramban goes in, I mean, the Malbim learns a Kabbalistic in the Kabbalistic way, which is very deep, and not that I understand it either, but the way he explains it, the little remnants of this glimpses we get. The body of the person, there are two parts of the neshama. There is the higher sphere of the neshama, and we just find it. And there is what we call neshama, and there is ruach. The ruach, there are two parts of the soul. The ruach is the part of the soul which he calls the Hylian spirit, which is in part of man, and that doesn't separate, that's not the higher spirit. Let's use language which we can understand, say like the higher spirit of the soul separates immediately on the time of death and is the entity, the unit living on itself. But there was like the lower spirit of the soul, which is placed into man. And that, through the good deeds and the mental effort that a person works at during his life, he goes ahead and he makes this lower spirit of Ruach totally spiritual. He's like able to separate it from the soul, that from the body, that the body does not gain any shlita, any force over it. And this soul also becomes sanctified to a higher level. But if this soul achieves it during the lifetime, fine. So then this soul of Ruach leaves together with Neshama. All that's left is really what the body. If the soul, however, does not, that's when the kfura comes in for the purpose of separating the elements of the body from that soul. And then the soul finally achieves purpose when the body is dissolved. Therefore, you find a number of things. You find the idea of tumah. This soul, which has to fulfill its mission when it's the deceased, when the soul is still in the body, the ruach, then that's what makes the person tummy. That's why you find the expression that kivrei tzadikim, the kfura of the tzadik, ain't a metame. That is not metame a person. Why? Because the tzadik, the ruach, already fulfilled its purpose when it was still living. So all that's left of the body is the earth, but it has no aspect of the soul within it. So when Yaakov Avinu, it says like Lei Meis also in that sense, the expression that Yaakov Avinu was pure in that he was this tzaddik, that the not only the neshama but the lower level of the ruach also had fulfilled its purpose. So therefore there's no importance to immediately bury him so that the ruach would separate and find its own tikkun. So there was no purpose of the flesh becoming part of the earth. So therefore, the prohibition, the concept against embalming would not really have applied to Yaakov Avinu. And this, we also find the expression, and they say that there are certain tzaddikim, that lo sholta bem rimo, that the worms have no power over them. The body is found intact. Why? Because that body did not, it wasn't necessary to undergo the separation from the ruach and the material part of the person. So therefore, the worms and the kever did not have the effect. This is only in layman's terms, general terms, to understand a very deep concept. And that's why vaychantu, that's why we find the expression, like the Malbim says, and they went ahead and they embalmed Yisroel. Why did they embalm him? Because he was Yisroel, because he was the madrega that he achieved. There wouldn't have been anything wrong with embalming him. Okay, we'll stop here.